You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 99 by Rudolf Steiner, 14 Lectures, translated by Johanna Collis, or Johanna Collis. This is Lecture 3, given in Munich on May 26th, 1907, entitled The Elemental World and the Heaven World, Waking Life, Sleep, and Death. We shall now study the human being in the state of waking life in the physical world, in the state of sleep, and in so-called death. From our own experience, we are all familiar with the waking state. When human beings fall asleep, their astral body and ego, together with what has been worked upon in the astral body by the ego, withdraw from the physical and ether bodies. Observing the sleeping human being clairvoyantly, you see the physical and ether bodies lying there in bed. These two members remain connected, whereas the astral body withdraws, together with the higher members. With clairvoyance, we can see how, in a sense, when sleep begins, the astral body withdraws from the other two bodies. To describe this condition with greater exactitude, we must say that the astral body of the modern human being appears as if it consisted of many streams and sparkles of light, and the whole appears like two intertwining spirals, as if there were two six figures, one of which vanishes into the physical body, while the other extends far out into the cosmos like the tail of a comet. Both these tails of the astral body very soon become invisible as they continue to expand, so that the phenomenon then takes on an ovoid shape. When the human being wakes, the tail no longer extends into the cosmos, and everything contracts back again into the ether and physical bodies. Dreaming is an intermediate condition between waking and sleeping. Sleep that is filled with dreams is a condition in which the astral body has relinquished its connection with the physical body. You could say has withdrawn its feelers from the physical body, but is still connected with the ether body. The human being's field of vision is then pervaded with the pictures we call dreams. This is an intermediate condition because the astral body has detached itself completely from the physical body, while remaining connected in some way with the ether body. While asleep, human beings live in the astral body outside the physical and ether bodies. The fact that they have to fall asleep has deep significance for their whole makeup. Do not imagine that the astral body is inactive and has no work to do during the night, while it is outside the physical and ether bodies. During the day, when the astral body is within the physical and ether bodies, influences come to it from the outside world, impressions which human beings receive as a result of the functioning of their own astral body, through their senses, through their activity in the physical world. Feelings and experiences, everything that works in upon the individual from outside, continues on into the astral body. This constitutes the actual feeling and thinking part of the human being. And the physical body, together with what is in the ether body, are only the transmitters, the instruments. The activities of thinking and will take place in the astral body. While the human being is active in the external world during the day, the astral body is receiving impressions all the time. But let us remember, on the other hand, that the astral body is the builder of the ether and physical bodies. just as the physical body with all its organs has solidified out of the ether body, so everything that streams and is active in the ether body has been born out of the astral body. Out of what is the astral body itself born? It is born out of the universal astral organism, which weaves through the whole of the cosmos that belongs to us. If you want a simile to help you envisage the relation of the small portion of astral substantiality contained in your own astral body to the great astral ocean, in which all human beings, animals, plants, minerals, and planets, too, are contained, and out of which they are born, if you want to envisage the relationship of the human astral body to the great astral ocean, think of one drop of a liquid from a glass. The drop derives its existence entirely from the liquid in the glass. Similarly, what is contained in an astral body was once embraced within the astral ocean of the cosmos. It is separated out from this ocean, and having passed into an ether body and a physical body, has become a distinct entity, like the drop taken out of the glass. As long as the astral body lay within the astral ocean, it received its laws and its impressions from this cosmic astral body. It had its life within this cosmic astral body. After its separation, it is exposed, during the individual's waking consciousness, to the impressions received from the physical world, so that it is divided between the influences coming from the cosmic astral body and those which it receives from outside as the result of the activity imposed upon it by the physical world. When humanity has reached the goal of its earth evolution, this division will merge into harmony. Today, these two kinds of influence do not harmonize. The astral body is the builder of the ether body, and also, indirectly, of the physical body, since the ether body is, in turn, the builder of the physical body. Everything that the astral body has built up piece by piece through the ages has been born out of the great cosmic astral ocean. Because only harmonious and healthy laws proceed from this astral ocean, the work carried out by the astral body in building the ether and physical bodies was originally healthy and harmonious. But as a result of the influences that come to the astral body from outside, from the physical world, impairing its original harmony, there arise all those disturbances of the physical body which prevail in humanity today. If the astral body were to remain within the human being all the time, the strong influences of the physical world would soon destroy the harmony brought by the astral body from the cosmic ocean. The human being would very soon be spent by illness and exhaustion. During sleep, the astral body withdraws from the impressions of the physical world that contain nothing that produces harmony, and passes into the cosmic harmony from which it was born. So in the morning it brings with it the lingering effects of the refreshment and renewal it has experienced during the night. Every night, the astral body renews its harmony with the cosmic astral ocean, and thus reveals itself to the clairvoyant as anything but inactive. The clairvoyant perceives a connection between the astral ocean and the one comet-like tail, and observes how this part of the astral body works to eliminate the debility caused by the world of disharmony. This activity of the astral body expresses itself in the feeling of refreshed vigor in the morning. Having lived during the night within the great cosmic harmony, the astral body has, of course, again to adjust itself to the physical world. Hence the feeling of greatest vigor does not arise until a few hours have elapsed after waking, when the astral body has again drawn into the physical body. We will now turn to death, the brother of sleep. and study the condition of the human being after death. The difference between a human being who is dead and one who is only sleeping is that at death the ether body passes away together with the astral body, and the physical body alone is left behind in the physical world. From birth until death, the ether body never leaves the physical body, except during certain states of initiation. The period immediately following death is of great importance for the human being. It lasts for many hours, even days, during which the whole of the incarnation that is just over comes before the soul of the dead person as in a great tableau of memories. This happens to every human being after death. The peculiarity of this tableau is that as long as it remains in the form in which it appears immediately after death, all the subjective experiences of the individual during life are as though expunged. Our experiences were always accompanied by feelings either of joy or pain, elation or sorrow. Our outer experience was always associated with an inner life. The joys and sorrows connected with the pictures of the past life are not present in the memory tableau. The human being confronts this memory tableau as objectively as he confronts a painting. Even if a painting depicts someone who is sorrowful or full of pain, we still look at it quite objectively. We can, it is true, discern the sorrow, but we do not experience it directly. So it is with these pictures immediately after death. The tableau spreads before us, and in an astonishingly brief span of time, we see in detail all the events of our life. Separation of the physical body from the ether body during life can take place only in an initiate. But there are certain moments when the ether body can be suddenly jerked from the physical body. This occurs when someone has a terrifying experience, for example, a fall from a high place or has been in danger of drowning. The shock causes a kind of loosening of the ether body from the physical body, and the consequence is that in such a moment, the whole of one's life up to that moment appears before the soul like a memory picture. This is analogous to the experience after death. Partial separations of the ether body also occur when a limb has gone to sleep, so as we say. If a hand, for instance, has gone to sleep, the seer can perceive the etheric part of the hand hanging down like a glove. Parts of the etheric brain also hang out when someone is in a state of hypnosis. Because the ether body is woven into the physical body in tiny pinpoint formations, the familiar sensation of pins and needles arises in the limb that has gone to sleep. After the period during which the ether body, together with the astral body, extricates itself from the physical body after death, there comes the moment when the astral body in its turn, together with the higher members, extricates itself from the ether body. The latter separates off, and the memory tableau fades away. But something of it remains. It is not wholly lost. What may be called ether or life substance dissipates in the cosmic ether, but a kind of essence remains, and this can never be lost to the human being throughout his further journeyings. He bears this within him into all future incarnations as a kind of extract from the life tableau, even though he has no memory of it. Out of this extract is formed what is called with concrete reality the, in quotes, causal body. After every incarnation, a new page is added to the book of life. This augments the life essence, and, if the past lives were fruitful, causes the next life to develop in a comparable way. This is what causes a life to be rich or poor in talents, qualities, and the like. In order to understand the life of the astral body after its separation from the ether body, we must consider the conditions obtaining in physical life. In physical life, it is the astral body that is happy, that suffers, that satisfies its desires, impulses, and wishes through the organs of the physical body. After death, these physical instruments are no longer at its disposal. The epicure can no longer satisfy his desire for choice foods, because the tongue has passed away with the physical body. But the desires, being connected with the astral body, remain in the individual. And this gives rise to the, quote, burning thirst, close quote, of the Kamaloka period. Parenthesis, Kama means desire, wish. Loka is place, but it is in reality a condition, not a place, close parenthesis. Someone who, during physical life, learns to transcend the physical body, shortens his time in Kamaloka. To take delight in the beauty or harmony of things means growth and development, for this leads us beyond the material world. To delight in art that is materialistic increases the difficulties of the Kamaloka state, whereas delight in spiritual art lightens them. Every noble spiritual delight shortens the time in Kamaloka. Therefore, already during earthly life, we must wean ourselves off pleasures and desires that can be satisfied only by the physical instrument. The period of Kamaloka is a time of breaking the habit of material pleasures and impulses. It lasts for approximately one-third of the time of an earthly life. There is something singular about the experiences undergone in Kamaloka. The individual begins to relive the whole of his life. Immediately after death, the experience was of a memory picture, free of any kind of joy or sorrow. Now, however, all joy and sorrow is re-experienced, but in reverse, so that all the joy or sorrow caused to others is now experienced in oneself. This has nothing to do with the law of karma. The journey goes backward, beginning with the last event before death, and proceeding at triple speed back to birth. When the human being reaches his birth in his backward journey of remembrance, the part of the astral body that has been transformed by the ego combines with the causal body. And what has not been so transformed falls away like a shadow, a phantom. This is the astral corpse of the human being. He has laid aside the physical corpse and the etheric corpse, and now also the astral corpse. He now lives through new conditions, those of Devakan. Devakan is all around us, just as is the astral world. When the life has been lived through backward as far as earliest childhood, when the three corpses have been discarded, the human being reaches the condition mysteriously indicated in the Bible by the words, quote, "Except ye become as little children, ye cannot enter the kingdom of heaven," close quote. Devakan, the spiritual world. This is the kingdom of heaven in the Christian sense. We must now describe the world of Devakan itself. It is a world as manifold and differentiated as our physical world. Just as solid regions, continents, are distinguished in the physical world, with an expanse of water surrounding firm ground, with the air above, and above the air still more rarefied conditions, so there is a similar differentiation in Devakan in the spiritual world. By analogy with conditions on earth, the phenomena to be found in Devakan have been given similar names. Firstly, there is a region that may be compared with firm physical ground. It is the continental region of Devakan. What is physical here on earth is in that region of Devakan a multitude of spiritual beings. Think, for example, of a physical human being. To Devakanic vision, he appears as follows. What the physical senses perceive vanishes, and light flashes up in the sphere immediately around the physical human being, where, otherwise, there is a void. In the middle, where the physical body is, there is an empty, shadowy space, like a kind of negative. Animals and human beings appear here in negative pictures. Blood appears green, its complementary color. All formations that are physical in our world are somehow present in the archetypes of Devakan. A second region, not separated off, but like a second stage, is the oceanic region of Devakan. It is not water, it is a particular substantiality, which in rhythmic streams pervades the world of Devakan in a color that may be compared with that of new peach blossom in spring. It is flowing life, and it pervades the whole of Devakan. What is distributed among individual human beings and animals here below is present in Devakan as a kind of watery element. We have a picture of it when we think of the diffusion of the blood in the human organism. The third region of Devakan can best be characterized by saying that what lives in beings in the physical world by way of feelings of happiness and suffering, joy, pain, and the like, is present there as an external manifestation. Take an example. Suppose a battle is waged here on the earth. Cannon, weapons, and the like, these are all on the physical plane. But within the human beings on the physical plane, there are mutual feelings of revenge, pain, passion. The two armies confront one another, full of opposing passions. Think of all this translated into external manifestation, and you have a picture of how it appears on the Devakanic plane. All that happens here on a battlefield appears in Devakan like the breaking out of a fearful thunderstorm. This is the atmosphere, the surrounding air of Devakan. Just as our earth is surrounded by air, so all the feelings that break out here, whether they come to physical expression or not, spread out in Devakan like an atmosphere. The fourth region of Devakan contains the archetypal forms, the archetypal foundations of all truly original achievements on the earth. If we examine closely the happenings of the physical world, we find that the vast majority of inner processes are instigated from outside. A flower or an animal gives us pleasure. Without the flower or the animal, we should not experience this particular pleasure. But there are also processes that are not instigated from outside. A new idea, a work of art, a new machine. All these things bring into the world something that was not there before. Original creations come into being in all these domains. If new creations did not arise in the world, humanity would make no progress. Creations of exceptional originality, given to the world by great artists and discoverers, are only a few degrees higher than any other truly original act, even the most insignificant. The point is that something original arises in the inner being. Archetypes exist in Devakan, even for the most insignificant original actions. All these things are already prefigured in that world. Any original achievement of a human being is already present there in a germinal state, even before birth. Thus in Devakan we find four regions, whose counter-images on the physical plane are earth, water, air, and fire. There is the continental region as the firm crust in Devakan, in the spiritual sense, of course. Then the oceanic region, corresponding to our area of water, the atmospheric regions, the streaming flow of passions and the like, beauty, but also tumult, is to be found there. Finally, there is the all-pervading world of the archetypes. Everything in the way of initiatives of will and original ideas, to which, later on, effect is given in the physical world by beings who return there, all this must be lived through by the soul in that world in order that fresh power may be gathered for the new life. The end of Lecture 3.